Addio, mia bella Napoli, addio, addio, la tua soave immagine, chi mai scordar potrò.
Ciao ragazzi e benvenuti to the 47th episode of In the Shadow of Vesuvio. My name is Henry Bell, broadcasting from the west of Scotland, but with me is a particularly depressed looking Michele Borelli, who is in Naples, in Napoli, in the shadow of Vesuvio. How are we 2 days after the grim exit from the Champions League?
Hello, hello, ciao, ciao everyone. Yeah, no, it's a depressing time right now to be a Napoli fan. Every time I say that to someone, they usually say, ah, you know what, I support, and then they mention this very unknown team in, like, in the fourth league in Premier League in England, and say, oh yeah, so you're lucky. Yeah, I guess it's true, but still, you know, it's not a good time right now. It's been a depressing, you know, I care a lot about Champions League, so when we go out, it's not like I expected anything else, but it's still depressing.
Exactly. It's like when a relationship's going wrong and you kind of know you're going to get dumped, but then you get dumped, it still hurts just as much knowing that it's coming. I mean, I wouldn't know about that, obviously, but like people have told me that. And number 47 in the Napoli Tombola is a kind of curiously accurate description of our feelings, perhaps. So would you like to tell us what that is, Michele?
Yeah, it's like we are timing these episodes right for this kind of results, because number 47 is O Mort, the dead man. And yeah, it's I think it's very appropriate to have this number this week right now, because it's, man, I don't know, man. I don't want to have a depressing episode, but there's really nothing I'm looking forward to. That's the thing. It's the lack of hope that kills you. It's not about the result, because you can always, you know, like even when we had Sarri, or even with, you know, with other, in more hopeful times, we crashed out of Champions League, even in bad ways. Yeah. But it was never like this. It was always like, oh, it's okay, you know, it's like, understand.
You can concentrate on the league or whatever. Exactly. Yeah, particularly with Sarri, like he obviously really wanted that squad.
Exactly. But now, we've got,
yeah. And we're actually, yeah, we're mathematically, one. We can't defend the title. We're out of the Supercoppa, we're out of the Coppa d'Italia.
Yeah, I'm shocked.
Out of the Champions League. I mean, yeah, I think that is a good point. And it's interesting, the inability for someone to conceive of a future is very linked to notions of clinical depression and all sorts. I mean, some of the work that I do in using creative methods in terms of drawing, working with people in vulnerable situations, often if you ask people to draw a picture of their conception of their future, if they're going through a particularly difficult moment, they actually will hand the piece of paper back to you blank. And, you know, obviously not drawing a parallel between people in actual difficult situations and us mere football fans. But it is a real thing. Like, if it's hard, if you've got nothing to look forward to, or if you can't conceive of a future that is in any way sort of fulfilling and exciting for you, then it is a very real and very lived sense of despondency. That's not going to cheer you up though, Michele, is it? I'm not seeing a great change here. But what we will do, this is, it's going to be a bit of a quick one, because I think we need the dust to settle a bit on this. And what we tend to do is wait a bit on these sorts of big moments. But I just think it's important. We really, for Michele, this episode, because it is a form of therapy for you,
I guess.
So where did you watch the game? So I think we both had quite different experiences of watching the game. So we'll start with you, and then I will talk about how I watched it.
Yeah, no, I went to a friend's house. It was three of us there, and yeah. I mean, it was just depressing. I don't know. No, I mean,
oh god,
the friends were lovely. I loved it, but even during the game, it wasn't like totally, completely lost. You know, in terms of, we actually thought there was some hope there. I actually like Napoli for I would maybe even the most part of the game. And that's the problem with it. I did think, you know, like when you see such a performance, you start thinking about other things too. I started thinking about last season as well, especially when watching some of the our players, like individual performances. Like we talked about this, like Anguissa was really, I don't know, man. It's really, again, it's very sad to see him play football right now.
He hasn't been very good for a year, I would say. If you think, where are we? Mid-March. If you remember, this time last year is really when things started to trail off a bit. And a lot of that was linked to certain players seemingly running out of gas because of the intensity of how the beautiful football that Spalletti was playing. And I think Anguissa was one of the first, I think, to sort of stop performing at that level. I can't think of too many games where he's got anywhere near where he was sort of, September to February last season. Anyway, you're watching it with three friends.
What about you?
Well, Glasgow Napoli
Oh,
gathered
nice.
together for the first time this season. And six of us went for a pizza at Paisano, where you've been. I did have Basil on mine. I thought of you. And there were nine of us in the pub. And it's interesting because I think we've had very different experiences. When you talk about the benefit of being in the stadium and having all those people around you to kind of make it feel better. For me, it was a weird evening because there was this brilliant coming together of people from not just Glasgow, actually, all around Scotland. People coming, I mean, you might not know where these places are, people listening in the States and stuff, but they're good parts of Scotland that are worth visiting. So people come from Dundee, people come from Alloa, people come from Edinburgh. These are long journeys, sometimes over an hour and a half, to come together watching Napoli. And that's pretty cool, actually. And these are people that, only one of us has any kind of Italian heritage, and that actually isn't from Naples. And so these are people that are just, stranieri who just love the club because of the club. And that is one of the beautiful things about football. And we were all there in our Napoli kits from various eras. And some of us turned up a bit late because of the pizza. And then the second we arrived, Barcelona scored. And
Nice.
then 2 minutes later, Barcelona scored again. And it was just like being
Perfect.
punched. It was so bad. It was just like, oh my God. And really at that moment, I thought, oh, it takes a bit of organization to get everyone together. Big shout out to Craig for booking Committee Room 9 in Glasgow. Nice one, Craig. And I thought, we've all come and it's going to be 7-0. How did you feel about those early goals? I think just to steer this conversation a bit, it was really indicative of a really major issue, I think, in the team, which is not winning the important bits of games, And I think it's historically been a bit of an issue with Napoli, apart from a few moments like, even under Sarri, when he was playing good stuff, there was still the important moments that often we wouldn't win because we get frustrated, blah, blah, blah. But it really felt with this game that we lost the important bits and won the unimportant bits. What was going through your head when those two goals went in very quickly?
Unfortunately, very familiar feelings because I think like every time we play these big games in Champions League, I always say it, we get scared. I don't know why. We go onto the pitch and we always are kind of scared of these big names, you know. We even though we're playing against a bunch of teenagers, but you know, still Barcelona. So it feels like we always get scared. That's what frustrates me the most, I would say. You know, even over the years, it's like we forget what kind of team we are and we just melt. And then after a couple of slaps in the face, then maybe we start playing again. But we always crumble. We always, you know, even though sometimes we have more experience than the opponents, even though, I mean, De Laurentiis always says, oh yeah, this is the only team in Italy which has been playing Europe for whatever, like 15 years. I don't know. And yeah, maybe true, but it doesn't feel like it. It doesn't feel like we have an experienced team in Champions League, even though we are. I mean, it's not like we went to the finals, but we always quite consistently play in Champions League. And in the past years, it was always the usual excuse was, oh yeah, we might be experienced, but this is like we never won anything. These players are losers because they have not won a trophy. And now we won a trophy and we still act like we are beginners in Champions League. That's very frustrating to me. So that's how I interpreted, that's how I felt when we conceded those two first goals. It was just Napoli melting completely. It was like tactically speaking, we were nowhere to be found, and it was quite sad to see. And it's very frustrating that we need to be punched in the face before we get it together. It's even more frustrating because once we started playing, I think we actually dominated Barcelona for a while. I mean, as long as we were compact and as long as we had our shit together, I would say, it felt like we were superior. And I mean, some people would say, yeah, obviously. I mean, you can dominate anything for a short amount of time. I didn't get this impression though. I did get the feeling that we were actually the better team, but we needed a lot of, how to say, like mental energy to be that team, if you know what I mean. That's the clear feeling I got while watching the team. As I told you, even on WhatsApp when we were chatting, I retroactively evaluated our Scudetto even better, in the sense that I actually thought that it was a great achievement. But after watching yesterday, and I mean, in general, this season, but especially yesterday, I clearly got the feeling, wow, this was actually a much bigger achievement than I even thought it was. And I really thought it was a great achievement because you could
Absolutely.
tell, like for a few minutes, we were Spalletti's team. Maybe not like completely, but you know what I mean. Like with the approach was right. We were all playing together. We were attacking. Like every time Barcelona had the ball and close to their box, we pressed very high. We were at like attacking, pressing, but like as a team, like very good pressing. And Barcelona didn't know what to do with it. Like they wasted their possession so many times, and it was because of us. Like thanks to us.
Yeah, and
And
actually, poor Jacob and Kevin, who was sat either side of me during the game, every now and then I'd just be like, triangles, triangles, look at the triangles, triangle, the shape. We actually have tactics. And I agree, the press and the options that we were talking about last time around on the podcast that are available to players is night and day between Calzona and Mazzarri and Garcia. However, it's too little too late, isn't it? I think, the bar is so low that we're comparing this stuff to, that once you put that into a, Champions League round of 16 game away, okay, they're weaker, but they've still got Gundogan, they've still got Lewandowski, they've still got João Felix. These are kids, but they are probably the best kids in the world because of,
No,
Barcelona's
absolutely, 100%, 100%,
famous
100%.
academy. But the bar is so low. So what we're looking at is a team that can do well against maybe fifth, sixth, and below in Serie A. And that's what really opened my eyes that, okay, there's a high press and there are triangles. But that's like minimum. That's like
Yeah,
basic.
definitely.
Like if you want to be competing for massive trophies, that's what you're doing. What Spalletti did is that that was the absolute baseline to Spalletti's team. And there was so much more than just that. And I completely agree with you, Michele, that actually it's drawn focus to this incredible achievement of Luciano Spalletti. I'm not saying that the players had nothing to do with it, but the further we get away from this season, and we've talked about this a lot on WhatsApp, haven't we? It feels like Spalletti's Scudetto. And I think, what are you the only person that thinks this in Naples? Like, have you tested this theory with people around you? Or like, how does this sit? Let's maybe just think a little bit about the position of Spalletti in people's minds at the moment.
No, I don't think. I mean, I don't know. It's hard. No, I haven't really. Let's say it's hard to talk about Napoli this season So it's not like every time we talk about Napoli, it's more as a stress valve. It's not for enjoyment. We don't really enjoy talking about Napoli. So no, I haven't gone into details with people about my theories. But this is a fresh, this is a fresh thought I had. So no, I haven't talked about this with anyone really. It's yes, Spalletti. I mean, people about Spalletti, they're still loved. I don't think people are really thinking about this aspect of, Spalletti's agenda. I think it's much easier to
It's
just
too raw, is
blame.
it? Like, what's going on this season? Like the terrible football. It must be. It's like
Yeah,
we said at the
no.
beginning, it's hard to zoom out, I suppose, and think
Yeah,
about these
sadly.
sort of slightly bigger things.
Yeah, it's just easier to blame what you see in front of your eyes. It's kind of hard to go abstract and think, yeah, maybe. I mean, it's just my thought. It's just that I see, like, especially like when watching someone like Anguissa playing, like, I feel like, because Anguissa, for me, is the perfect example to analyze what's happening to this team right now, because it's a player with great skills, because skills don't just go away, clearly. But this is a guy who, if he doesn't apply himself, it's over. Like, he doesn't really perform at all. Like, he looks like an average Michele Pazienza or something. So it's just, it's, I guess, I didn't know Anguissa before he came here, but I guess that's why he didn't really. He wasn't really in demand before we signed him,
Fulham
but
fans were delighted to see the back of him, to be honest, I think. Although he performed well for them, I think, when they were in the English second division. And then things went a bit, I could have got that wrong. Yeah, it was interesting with Anguissa because Calzona's first couple of games are there was some hope for Anguissa. You saw him really work this thing on the kind of right side. We've seen it a couple of times where he goes really quite far ahead on the kind of right side, and then this opens up all sorts of options. It's happened a couple of times, nearly resulting in some good stuff happening. But these are like few and far between, the kind of base level, and particularly playing against a team like Barcelona, that's not good enough, is it? If we're really honest,
no, and I
so.
think that unfortunately, I don't see much of a solution except like selling everyone, to be honest. I do think that probably, yeah. I mean, this is why I prefer to do this podcast a few days later, because I've been thinking about a lot of things. I've been thinking that probably, like, I mean, clearly, the main problem with this season is, like, they started last summer with the almost non-existent transfer window. We didn't buy anyone. We also didn't sell anyone, but maybe that's the problem. It does feel like when De Laurentiis, like, this is what I was thinking about this yesterday. It feels like when De Laurentiis starts to, like, follow, if you know what I mean, when he starts to kind of like follow something that he thinks it's the proper way to do things, we fail. For example, like not selling players because it's the right thing to do. Like, when he doesn't risk and he takes the conservative route, it feels like usually it doesn't really pay off. Like the
Like
last
when
season.
Chelsea offered us like 40 million for Heisai, for example,
Yeah,
if you remember.
exactly.
Like,
Exactly. And
take the
to be
money.
honest,
Oh.
yeah, but to be honest, when PSG offered us like 80 millions for Haaland, and he didn't sell, it's not like the fan base went, "Oh, you're crazy to not sell." Like, everyone was happy. Like, "Oh yeah, well, we are such a powerful team that we can say no to PSG for one of the our starters." But that's not the case. Like, so I don't think it's a coincidence that when, like, he did something really incomprehensible, that it was very much criticized on, like selling five of our starters and replacing them with relatively unknown players, then we won the league. Like, it felt like he actually, it kind of like broke things off in a way. It was like, okay, you know what, whatever, like, this team doesn't really work, even our best players are somehow toxic, and yeah, let's just get rid of them. Let's, again, I mean, it was probably not really like a enlightenment tactic. It was more like, okay, I pay these players too much, let's get rid of the, like,
throwing them
expensive
in the
salaries.
dumpster. Yeah, it wasn't exactly, it wasn't
Yeah,
a
but
sort
there
of
is a
elegant process, was it?
exactly, but there is a lesson to be learned there, because again, I don't really trust De Laurentiis when he talks in general, but he did say, thing is, we don't know what the players are like in the dressing room. We only know what they want us to see outside, in interviews and stuff. So De Laurentiis said that he knows these players. He said, we got rid of some of the toxic elements. They were professional players. It wasn't like they were not professional, but in their minds, they were not motivated anymore. And this was after, Sarri. He said, when Sarri left, we almost got the Scudetto, and these players never recovered from it. So it was like almost success, and it destroyed them. I think it applies even more now that we won a Scudetto, and these players kind of felt like they were accomplished players after a while. It's hard to motivate. I do think that probably Spalletti's way of managing them, which is basically squeezing them for everything they have. I mean, it paid off, but obviously it takes a toll on players. And after they won, it would have taken a toll regardless, even if we didn't win. But it took a toll. And now that they've won, I think it's hard for them to think that there is something beyond the Scudetto. So, in my opinion, I was looking at the average age of Napoli. And I mean, it's not like we're playing with very young players, because I mean, Politano, for example, our starter is 30 years old. Zielinski is going to be 30. Anguissa is 28, which is, I mean, it's not old, but it's not like 22 or something. Juan Jesus is old. Like, our defense is very old.
Yeah.
Obviously, Juan
And
Jesus,
also on
Rachmani.
Anguissa, a 28-year-old central midfielder, you would expect him to be at his peak at this stage, particularly
Exactly.
in the position that he plays, sort of box to box. And
Yeah,
he's not like
but
he's an Andrea Pirlo deep lying person that can improve with age, like a fine wine. But
I agree. I agree,
there
but
is, I think
probably.
you've, yeah. But I think there's a really interesting point you've made about this kind of really interesting parallel, which is very different in some ways, the psychological damage of the near miss of the Scudetto and how that lingered with the kind of spine of the team after 2017, 2018. And it wasn't until that was pulled out that eventually success arrived. That what's happening is actually, it looks very similar in some ways, but just the cause for it is very different. That actually what's happened is the success has bred complacency is maybe not even quite the right word. I think it's, maybe it is complacency, or at least
I think,
it's removed an appetite, hasn't it?
yeah,
That's
exactly. I think they're just like empty in a way, And I think probably it's harder to get a recovery, like on the sports side of things, clearly. It's harder to get a recovery from players who were once very good and then they kind of got deflated in a way. It's harder to recover them than actually selling them, buying new young players and getting them up, if you know what I mean. Like it's especially if we keep a manager like Calzona, which in many ways has a similar approach to Sarri, which is the kind of like a teacher approach to things. It's not like a Ancelotti approach where it just, like a super friends with everyone. Yeah, let's go out together. I love you, you love me, but it teaches nothing to players. The Sarri approach is, okay, you are this player, I will make you become this other player, which is much better. I think it's harder for a manager like Calzona to get, again, I don't want to keep going on Anguissa. It's not like he was the worst. Like he actually didn't have like a super bad game, but in general, I think it's a perfect example. It's just harder to get Anguissa to get to his, in my opinion, I guess, a bit, because no one knows the truth. We don't have a crystal ball here. But probably it's better to sell off Anguissa and buy someone who's younger and who's more malleable, someone who you can actually shape in the form that you want.
Or
And
a good Scottish midfielder with the knowledge of Serie A, like Lewis Ferguson, for example.
yeah, sure, why not? Yeah.
It would
I
definitely
don't
make
know.
nine guys in Glasgow really happy if that happened.
I would love that. I would love that to happen.
But I think, this is really this is sage thinking here, very wise. What was it? It was, you told me you're very emotional at the moment, but this is very rational thinking. I think
This is therapy, like you said. You know, again, I've been having these thoughts for a couple of days now, but it's because it's the thing is, for me, I feel like the season is over now, right? It's not like I had a lot of hopes, even with Calzona. It's not like I did have some, because you never know, you never know. It does feel like these great things always happen to other teams. You know, like these
It's
major
true.
upsets. Where, oh yeah, even though Barcelona is, they say, I don't think it's actually true, but they say, yeah, one of the worst Barcelonas of the last 20 years.
Yeah, but
It
look at
does
that
feel
third
like,
goal, Michele. Look at that third goal. It was Gundogan to João Felix to Lewandowski. Like
no,
three incredible players, albeit not all of
exactly.
them at the very peak of their game, against a Napoli team that's learning how to do the basics again in the middle of a season,
Exactly.
whose
So, yeah.
fitness levels all over the place because of previous regimes. That's not an excuse for the opening. Some weird quotes from Juan Jesus afterwards saying basically that they weren't ready psychologically, that they were surprised by the intensity. It's like, you're away at Barcelona, mate. Why are you surprised that it's intense? I think it's, whilst we're sort of zooming out a bit and thinking of the bigger picture, obviously in between this show and last show, there was all sorts of stuff about ADL's stadium plans for Bagnoli. We're not going to squeeze that in today because this is a bit of a short one, to be honest. But I think let's see if anything massive happens between now and next week. But I reckon next week we'll go into real detail. We'll bring in some of your thoughts that you tweeted out to us a few months ago about the stadium. I've already had a bit of a WhatsApp preview from Michele about thoughts about Bagnoli. So we'll go into detail about that. So I don't think it's weird that we're not mentioning it.
No, but this is something that will take years to develop. So, like, we could have like episode a month about the stadium, because every time they will always have something new for us to talk about. It's not something, it will take years and years and years not to build the stadium, but to decide what to do about the stadium. So this is just, they're just floating ideas around. There is no project. They've been talking about a new stadium for years, but there's never been an real project, to be honest. Even, I mean, the one that they presented like 6 or 7 years ago, I don't even count it because that was awful, like just awful. And yeah, so yeah, I do want to talk about the stadium. I guess we'll have an episode where we talk about the whole history of, I guess the past 10 years, 10, 15 years about the stadium, because there are a lot of things that people don't know. And when I read that, oh yeah, I read so many comments, oh yeah, the city should just let De Laurentiis have the stadium. That's not how it works. It really frustrates me. And it's not always, two parties, one against each other. Sometimes it's just one party against the world, against itself. And
Yeah, it's
we're
true.
seeing how De Laurentiis has been acting lately. I think it's crazy to give credit to this guy right now. It's, I don't know. It is interesting. It is. I do care a lot about the stadium. It is one of my dreams to have like a proper stadium in Napoli, and it is my literally all time dream to have a stadium in Bagnoli. I've been saying this even before De Laurentiis tweeted about it like 7 years ago.
Well, we talked
So
about it
yeah.
on the show as well. Like, if you've been to Naples and you've wandered around, and you've made it as far out as Bagnoli, you're just like, why didn't they just put it here? And it's by the sea as well. And anyway,
Exactly. But there are a lot of issues. I've realized that people don't really understand what Bagnoli represents for Italy, for Napoli, because it's a very, very problematic area, and it's something
but this
that,
industrial past as well,
exactly, yeah, but it's been taken as an example of failure of Italian bureaucracy for years. Like, so many wasted resources have gone to Bagn into Bagnoli for the in the past 30 years. It's crazy. So in the past 30 years, I mean, say, so when the Laurentiis comes and says, oh yeah, I'll build the stadium in 3 years or something, yeah, sure. I mean, everyone in Napoli
In
just laughed
Pocalupo.
at it. Yeah, because we've been reading news about, like, personally, I think I've watched like five or six projects about Bagnoli, not about the stadium, about possible idea, like actual ideas for Bagnoli, like parks and a new beach and stuff. Every time I get attached emotionally because I love the Bagnoli area. I do think that if exploited well, it could be amazing, massive for the city of Naples. But
Yeah.
yeah, it's a complicated issue, and we'll cover it into more details. I want to do just one episode about the stadium. Hopefully, it's gonna be next week. I don't think there's gonna be a lot to talk about when it comes to actual football. We
Well,
got
as you say, the season's over, so we've got quite a lot of time to go. Maybe you should go to Bagnoli. I want you to record the sounds of Bagnoli that we can pipe to our listeners. But
That's the
yeah.
thing. You can go to Bagnoli. It's restricted. It's a restricted area. You can't even walk there.
Oh, the actual stadium sides. Yeah.
No. Just the whole area.
It's
It's a big
imposing.
area. It's like
Yeah.
completely, like closed off. You can't, well, like it's illegal to walk in it because it's polluted, because
Yeah.
the previous industries that were there.
Right. Can't wait. I mean, that would be a tricky away match for most teams. Like, if they can't be on the pitch, then, we're not going to lose. So
Again, as I
maybe
said,
ADL's a genius,
maybe. Again, as I said, it's complicated. It's not just, hey, look, here's an empty area. Let's build a stadium on it. No, it's, oh, here's an empty area which has been empty for 30 years. Let's clean it up first, and then let's get. No, it's very complicated. There is, like the justice system is also involved. It's super complex, and yeah, we'll go into it if people are interested, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's a little sneak preview, everybody listening. Whilst we're just talking more broadly, we got a great thread through from one of our listeners called Stefan. He and I know Ken from Far From Vesuvius turned actually responded point by point to this thread. Do check out the at Far From Vesuvius Twitter timeline, whatever it's called these days. And just to say again, we're not going to go through it point by point because Ken's done it, but we will be coming back to some of these points over the next few weeks because it's really interesting what Stefan's highlighted in terms of the mistakes made in player recruitment, the mistakes made in, director of football, who that is, who it's going to be in the future, and some sort of interesting questions about what needs to happen, with the bigger picture of Napoli in terms of making some kind of recovery. And I would say that the stadium falls into that category too. Although one of the most surprising things that I've noticed this season is how many people are actually going to the stadium despite the performance of the team. And historically, Napoli fans, one of the things I liked about Napoli fans is that there is this slight attitude of like, well, you have to earn my presence in the stadium team by actually playing. Not all fans, not you, of course, Kelly, you're there week in, week out. But there's a bit of me that actually quite likes that whole approach to things. So yeah,
Yeah,
Stefan,
that's
thanks so much for that really detailed response.
the attendance has been surprising in a way, not a lot, because if you follow what's going on with the stadium, it's actually quite interesting. Finally, they put someone professional in charge of ticketing,
Yeah.
and they've managed tickets quite well, like I would like reasonable prices, like as slightly higher, but they are tied to demand. So when the demand is lower, they lower prices, they implement discounts, like for
Airline
the.
system, as they call it, isn't it? The airline system of
Yeah,
ticketing.
so, well, that's, yeah, kind of, more or less, but it's quite interesting, finally, that someone is, knows what they're doing when it comes to tickets. It's night and day. I think it's, I don't remember the name of this guy. I think it's Bianchini or something, but they got,
But
yeah,
we
they
all know,
hired.
listeners, we all know he's just keeping the seat warm for you, Michele.
Hopefully.
If there's one person in this world who knows more about ticketing and the Napoli Stadium than anyone, I believe it is you.
Well, I mean, he's doing everything I've been saying to do for years. So yes, to be
Maybe
honest,
he
yes.
is you. Maybe this is very smart. You're using a nom de plume, a pseudonym, and then you're giving yourself all these compliments on a podcast that we know billions of people listen to,
Yeah,
including.
this guy's a genius. I don't know him, but he's actually great. And finally, he's doing everything I've been telling him to do
It's
for
like I used to
years
be
and years
known.
and years.
I used to be known as Frank Sidekick on Twitter. I got like 1,000 odd followers because I didn't want my old university to nick my intellectual copyright. So I should resurrect Frank Sidekick and talk about what a brilliant podcaster Henry Bell Calcio. I've given it away now.
Yeah,
Everyone's
too
going to know.
late. Please edit, cancel it, delete.
Yeah, we can get Rafa to cut this bit out. Okay, I don't want to go on too much longer, to be honest, Michele, because I think there's not too much we can say. I didn't want to go too long without a podcast. I also wanted, for your own well-being, to be able to process this and talk about things. And I think there's some really interesting stuff to digest there about, what is wrong. And it's the first time actually on this show we've really talked about the players and actually putting a bit of blame on them. And I think that is legitimate, to be honest. And we all watched what happened on Tuesday. Not necessarily, I think it was to average out performance levels. They would be probably quite good, but in those key moments, it was just wasn't good enough. Do you have, Michele, a Neapolitan expression that can sum all this up? Or is it just you screaming?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the praise of the week is me screaming in the microphone for 5 minutes, and hopefully someone will take something from it, some lesson. I don't
That's
know.
fine. It's screaming
But
in. It's like dogs barking is different in different languages. Like in English, it's woof. In Italian, it's bow. Maybe screaming is different in Neapolitan than it is in English.
yeah, I do have an expression of the week. It tries to be a little bit optimistic, even though I don't really feel like it right now, because I do feel like the season is over and there is nothing left. To be honest, there is still a fifth place to reach. Maybe fifth place, fourth place. It is kind of reachable because we have a lot of games against our direct rivals for the fourth place. I don't feel too optimistic right now because I do think that, like Calzona said, the problem is mostly mental when it comes to players, when it comes to these performances. I do think that now that we're out and they are out of Champions League, it won't help the mental aspect of things for these players. So maybe they will surprise me. I really struggle to see how, because I think that a lot of them are on their way out. Some of them we already know, like Osimhen, and some of them I suspect. But yeah, I don't it I think it's quite hard to be motivated when you know that, in 3 or 4 months you're gonna be in another team. Zielinski is showing it to us very clearly.
Shocking.
Yes. So yeah, well, the expression of the week this week is Alietta Street Cocco de Meads, which is quite fun. I like it. Alietta Street Cocco de Meads. Cocco de Meads, even. And it basically means if you have a narrow bed, like a small bed, make do with it and sleep right in the middle. It's just a way of saying that, when you are not able to fulfill your desires, your dreams, at least make yourself comfortable at best you can. So if you have a narrow bed, you sleep right in the middle and you have some room to the left and to the
Sleep
right.
in the
And
middle of the single bed. That's how I translate it. You got
exactly.
the sibilance of sleep and single.
You could say that. I don't know what sleeping in the middle right now is for this club. Maybe clearly we need, the thing is, I feel very depressed about not qualifying for the club's World Cup,
Oh, it would
because
have been so cool.
it's like taking money out of our own pocket and giving them to Juventus, which
Yeah, it
is,
makes it even worse each time when
it's very
Juve
bad. It's kind of the same feeling when we didn't qualify for Champions League with that last game against Verona with Gattuso, and Juventus went to
too
Champions
soon,
League instead.
Michele. Too
Well, I
soon.
know.
I'm still not ready to talk about that.
Well, funnily enough, they are exactly related, because if we qualified for that Champions League, then we would have taken points away from Juventus and we would have gained points instead. So now we would be in the World Cup and we would have,
Oh, really? Yes, of
would
course.
have, yeah, it is. Yeah, we would have had a lot of money from that Champions League and we would have had a lot of money for this World Cup. So basically, that draw against Verona has cost us about, I think, about 100, 120 million, just that one game.
Grazie, Rino. Grazie, Rino.
Yes.
Right. Well, there we go. So let's, listeners, Michele, let's. Tonight, when we're lying in our beds, just move slightly further into the middle. If there's someone else in there, just push them out and just lie in the middle of your bed, close your eyes, and try to imagine the future of Napoli and just try to find up some kind of positive thought there, everybody. That's what I'm trying to do here, trying to end on a positive during an incredibly miserable moment in history of what is it? Società Sportiva Calcio Napoli, whatever it is. Right. Should we hear 5 minutes of you screaming now, Michele?
Yeah, we can do it like as a bonus content, maybe for the very loyal listeners. We will release it later. Yes.
Well, thanks for
Me
listening,
just
everybody.
screaming
Just
profanities at the microphone, yeah.
exactly. Well, if you want to find the written form of that, then head to at Michele GNT on Twitter. That was smooth. I'm very happy with that. Find me at Henry by Calcio. Find the show at Shadow of Vesuvio, where you'll find Stefan's thread I was mentioning earlier on, which is really interesting. We're part of the Far From Vesuvius Network at Far From Vesuvius. Grazie mille to Rafa for production. And, chin up. Let's keep going. Forza Napoli.
Sempre, always, even now.
Yeah.